It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. By Defense Department estimates, about 12,000 Afghan refugees came to Fort McCoy 2 years ago after the Taliban takeover of Afghanistan and the withdrawal of U.S. troops. And since then, some refugees have made a life here. We check in on the community efforts to support resettlement, and you can be part of the discussion. Call in with a question or comment at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Kai Yael Gardner-Mishlov is Executive Director of Jewish Social Services of Madison. Kai, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. So what are typical challenges of Afghan refugees resettling or settling in Wisconsin?
Well, you know, I can especially speak to Dane County. Basically, first of all, let me tell you that all refugees, including the Afghan community, are facing trauma. They're dealing with trauma due to what they've come from, the instability, the migration, and abuse that they've suffered. And so as they're settling into their new homes, we are tasked with helping them, you know, mitigate that and helping them make a new home in a way in such that they feel welcome, and also in a way that we are able to provide services to them so that they can, you know, adequately settle into their new homes. So, you know, some of the challenges that we're facing in Dane County specifically are related to housing and transportation. Many of the families, you know, that we resettle, for example, we've resettled over about 165 refugees for this fiscal year, which started in October and will end in October. So of those families that we've resettled, we've had many challenges due to Dane County really facing a 14% increase in rental costs. So this trip down to our Afghan families who are typically coming with larger families. So we have a scarcity of available and affordable housing. That's number one on our list. And then if you're looking at the cultural needs of folks who are resettling in Wisconsin, I mean, the Afghan community has come from extreme trauma and also cultural differences. So we are tasked with making sure that we're able to assist them with this new culture in Wisconsin, whether it be the cold environment or how to navigate a new healthcare system, a new social service system, something that they may not be, familiar with, and also language barriers. We have families who are coming in where they do not speak English or very minimal English. So we're, you know, we're also tasked with making sure we connect them to literacy providers so that they can receive ESL services.
I want to pick up on something you said there about finding that sense of community. And a year ago, Spectrum News One spoke with a former Afghan police commander who had resettled in the Green Bay area. Here is Shah Mohammed Mohammadi.
When I came here, I don't know about the American people culture. I didn't know about everything. That was hard for me.
So much to take in and to learn in the new culture of what was around him. What resettlement support is there for trying to find new community?
Oh, definitely. Well, first of all, the way at JSS we handle refugee resettlement from a point of resilience. Remember that the refugees that we're seeing are about 1% of those who were able to make it out. So these are folks who are coming with a lot of resilience, a lot of strength. However, they may not know the current culture. So at JSS, it's important for us to connect new coming refugees with communities that are similar or a part of their own culture. For example, if someone is Muslim coming in, we try to make sure that we connect them to the local masjid, to the Muslim community. If someone is Syrian, we're trying to connect them to the existing Syrian community here also, so that they find a sense of something that's familiar. But at the same time, we promote creating new community. And by that, I mean that we set up our new incoming refugees with mentors. And mentoring is a two-way street because we feel that refugees have just as much to share with us as we do with them. So we try to put all of these support systems in place from communities of origin and also with our new American community, which may be new for them, and case management, which you know, we try to coordinate things in such a way that they're wraparound so that we can ease the transition. You know, whenever you go to a new place and you're resettling, just imagine here, don't know the language, you don't know the culture. Imagine if you were dropped on Mars, for example. You didn't know the language, you didn't know the culture, you didn't know how to mitigate or navigate those services. It's very important if you have folks around you who are familiar with that new culture and the navigation process. And it's even more of a plus if you are able to connect folks with communities similar who have gone through the same transition.
We're talking with Kyle Gardner-Mishlove about Afghan refugees resettling in Wisconsin, specifically Dane County. Kai leads Jewish Social Services of Madison. And you can join in with your perspective, your questions at 800-642-1234. Kai, we're going to hear another voice now. Najib Azad is a former spokesman for the Afghan government who resettled in Stevens Point. And a year ago, he talked with NBC 15 about feeling his family had been placed in the wrong region. Here's Najib.
The connections I still have are in other states, and we were not listened, right? And then they just decided to send you wherever wherever they want to send you. Doesn't matter if you can have opportunities there, if you can find fair jobs there.
So Najib said he felt supported by the Stevens Point community, but had better job prospects and better connections elsewhere. Are resettlement organizations able to help families move to different places?
Well, you know, the resettlement process, involves one of the 9 resettlement agencies based in D.C., and they make decisions of where to send refugees throughout the U.S. And that's usually, and those agencies are called VOLAGs. And basically that just stands for Voluntary Resettlement Agency. And what happens is, for example, we are an affiliate of HIAS, the Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, which is the oldest refugee resettlement agency in the country, over 130-year history. So HIAS, along with the other 8 resettlement agencies in DC, will decide which city they will send a refugee. And it's based on availability. They try to send folks where there are existing communities and where there are openings. So they will make a decision, for example, we're going to send this person from Afghanistan or from Syria or from Ethiopia or from the Congo, as an example. That's not exclusive, but we will send someone, they will decide, we will send this family of 8 to Madison, Wisconsin, to JSS, because they have availability or openings for this family. So they take into account, the housing and the economic availability in that city or state. But, you know, at times it's challenging because, as you know, for example, in Madison, we have a lot of challenges related to housing. However, yes, we have a growing community. And so you kind of have to weigh the pros and the cons to see, what are the chances of success for this family? Here at JSS, we have a very dedicated staff who reach out to community members, to volunteers. We have a very robust volunteer network here, and that's a plus. And that, you know, will assist with the transition, but we're still subject to whatever the labor market is in our community. So we're doing the best that we can given that. But I do understand, you know, listening to what the gentleman was saying, you know, he may have had other connections in other states and he may have preferred to go somewhere else, but maybe there was not an opening in the state that he wanted to go to available, you know, depending on who was resettling him.
That makes sense. Yes.
Yeah. And within the first 90 days, it's very intense, just to let you know. refugee resettlement within the first 90 days. There's a rush to do everything that we can to assist folks, you know, with housing, with getting acclimated for employment, for ESL, if that's needed, and also enrollment for if they're children in the family, school enrollment, and also medical screenings and follow-up medical care. So that's a lot to deal with within the first 90 days, especially if you're not familiar with the culture or their language.
And taking such a wraparound approach to the life of this household. Kai Yael Gardner-Mishlov, Executive Director of Jewish Social Services of Madison, as we discuss efforts to help Afghan refugees build a life in Wisconsin. You can be part of the conversation at any point. Call in with a question, share your comment, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thousands of Afghan refugees were sent to Fort McCoy 2 years ago following the withdrawal of U.S. troops in Afghanistan and the collapse of its government to the Taliban. We check in on refugee resettlement activities and what it takes for Afghan refugees to build a new life here in Wisconsin. Call in with a question, share your experiences, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Kai Yael Gardner-Mishlov leads Jewish Social Services of Madison and stays with us. Kai, turning to funding, state lawmakers over the summer passed a $99 billion budget for the next 2 years. Does the state's budget provide aid to resettlement efforts?
Oh, definitely. So we are recipients of funding from the Office of Refugee Resettlement. So that's on the federal level, and it's filtered through HIAS, Hebrew Immigrant Aid Society, our national agency who sends funding to us, but also through the Bureau of Refugee Programming the Department of Children and Family Services. So we receive funding to provide services to refugees, and we're very grateful for that. So for example, one of the funding streams that we receive is for refugee social services and also career development. And these are very, very important programs that we're very proud of. RSS program, also known as Refugee Support Services, provides services for the entire family. So we look at that refugee from the standpoint of who is in that family and what are their needs and what can we do to meet those needs. So you may have a family of four. Let's say you have dad who has an advanced degree. So let's say you have mom who may not have any kind of degree, and I'm speaking about the Afghan community, and you may have two children, right? Maybe one has special needs. So we're gonna look at each person in that family and figure out what do we need to do as far as connecting them with employment, with education, if they need some enhancement in that area, with career development. Someone coming in may have had, experience as an architect, for example, back in their home, but they come here and they don't have the credentialing that's necessary to work in this country, you know, in that profession. So we're going to say, what does our labor market offer for them here right now? What sort of employment can we connect them with immediately so that they can provide, you know, for their family? And then how can we gradually assist them in following whatever career path they would like? So this is all funding that we're getting through RSS and RCDS, which are some of the programs that are coming through the state. In addition, there's other funding that's available for behavioral health support that's coming through our Bureau of Refugee Programming at our state. And that's very important because you have to remember that refugees are coming with trauma due to instability, migration, abuse, and maybe inadequate care that they received at home. And it's a big challenge to have to, leave your home abruptly, you know, usually under distress.
Yes.
Coming to a new place, there's new stress that you're dealing with as you're trying to acclimate, and you haven't resolved that previous stress that you, you know, that you left behind, but you're bringing it with you still. So how can we assist in making sure that we connect them to the proper care for behavioral health and also for physical health? And we try to look at things from social determinants of health. What have refugees left behind? What conditions do they find themselves in where they, when they arrive here? We want to decrease any kind of social isolation or loss of that social network that they might have had from their home country. So how can we recreate that? How can we make sure that they're accessing culturally appropriate care? And how can we help them navigate some of the systemic barriers of healthcare and social service systems in general that exist? And also, how can we assist them in attaining their dreams of what their life, where what they would like their life to become? So we do all of that through these programs and this funding that we receive. And, you know, and also interpretation, that's very important that we provide that to them immediately so that they understand, you know, the new systems that they're in, and make sure that we're providing them with ESL services and referrals. So that's some of the funding that a lot of refugee supporting agencies are receiving from the state, and it's critical.
So much coordination. Kai Yael Gardner-Mishlove talking with us about the so many different aspects of the resettlement of Afghan refugees. And Kai leads Jewish Social Services of Madison. You can join in with your question or your concern, 800-642-1234. Kai, in terms of paperwork, lawmakers reintroduced legislation in Congress over the summer aiming to establish permanent residency for Afghans who worked with Americans during the war in Afghanistan. And the legislation has bipartisan sponsors. What are the challenges in gaining permanent residency?
Oh, there are a lot of challenges. You have to remember that the Afghan community, and also there are other communities that are facing this too, such as the Ukrainian community, they're coming in as parolees, meaning that they have temporary status. So our job is to make sure that we refer folks as soon as possible for legal services so that they can, you know, they can be assisted in becoming permanent residents. And it takes quite a bit of paperwork, quite a bit of time, and quite a bit of coordination of services. And things are constantly changing regarding, you know, some of the regulations and rules. So we really, really value our immigration partners, whom we refer to, especially in Dane County, such as Silk, such as CMC, and also there's some private attorneys who are assisting as well.
Do you find that Afghan refugees need legal help to navigate the U.S. immigration system?
Absolutely. Everyone does. Immigration law is extremely technical, and it's easy to make a mistake. So this is not something that you want to navigate on your own. You really need a very experienced attorney to assist you with this.
What do people in Wisconsin often misunderstand about the experiences of Afghan refugees?
I think that, first of all, I've found that the community in Wisconsin, for the most part, is extremely supportive of refugees, but there's also always more work to do. I think that what some of the misunderstanding, if it occurs, occurs because we're looking at things through our own lens of being a Wisconsinite or being an American. And we may miss some of the nuance involved with a new culture trying to acclimate. So I think the most important thing for our community to understand is, one, that refugees are coming with resilience, but also coming with trauma. And if we are able to assist them in navigating the system, we're also able to assist others in navigating systems. You know, refugees are resettled often in communities where there may be pre-existing disparities. So they may highlight some of the disparities that we may not have been paying attention to. So it's very important that, you know, I always look at this work as it takes a village, and need to be open and understanding and do everything that we can to welcome newcomers in a way that respects their culture and in a way that recognizes the resilience that they have. We should be looking from not a deficit standpoint, but from a resilience standpoint.
Kai, I'm sorry to jump in, but thank you so much for joining us and sharing this work.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. And I encourage all of our listeners to stay in touch with their elected officials so that we're able to continue to resettle and welcome refugees and newcomers. Thank you so much.
Kai Yael Gardner-Mishlov, Executive Director of Jewish Social Services of Madison. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Maureen McCollum with a story about a long-running music fest taking place next weekend.
Summer calendars in Wisconsin seem to overflow with music festivals. One of the longest-running gatherings is Larry Fest, which has been showcasing some of the region's best acoustic roots music since before it was back in the mainstream. WPR's Ezra Wall tells us more about its lasting legacy.
It's a rehearsal day for the Trempealeau-based bluegrass band Crooked Willow. The group formed in 2013 and features Elise Smith Waller singing and playing the banjo. Her husband Tim Waller plays the guitar and writes some of the group's songs. Jesse McDonald and Eric Hansen round out the group on fiddle and bass, respectively. Crooked Willow gets together to practice in the Wallers' living room before their upcoming performance at Larry Fest. The popular bluegrass festival has made rural Lafarge a summertime destination for more than 25 years. The Larry in Larry Fest is Larry Sobranek, a maple syrup farmer who lives near Lafarge in Vernon County. He doesn't mince words when he talks about how he got interested in bluegrass music.
It's probably been quite a few years ago, but after country music went to hell.
Larry, his brother Dan Sobranek, and friend Larry Liebel talked with me about the festival's unassuming name and its humble origins.
After the first festival, we were sitting at our local bar. There was about 10 or 15 people there, and they all had hats that said Larry Fest on it.
And you hated the idea.
I didn't like it.
It took about 5 years to get used to it. But after the first one we did, Bohemian Glen Music Fest, which, you know, doesn't really roll off the tongue. Somebody came in the bar, Leonis, and said, "Are you going to do that Larry Fest thing again?" Somebody said it. And I said, "That's it. That's the name."
Elise Smith Waller says the remote, rural setting of the festival helps to remove the distractions of modern, everyday life for musicians and festival goers alike.
There's something special about Larry Fest. There's no internet service, so you have to kind of be present.
The music may seem old-fashioned to some, but Elise's fellow band members, bassist Eric Hansen and fiddle player Jesse McDonald, both public school music teachers, say connecting people to traditional music is important.
I think it just speaks to people's souls. It's just a departure from what you hear day to day.
I think there's good music across all the centuries. So often folks think like music from long ago just isn't fun or lively or stuffy and stiff. And any great musician or artist or person who's passionate about what they're doing, they can make it come alive.
There's a handful of quirky traditions the festival faithful have come to look forward to. Mysterious, illuminated, skeletal figures dance through the woods. Giant piles of sweet corn free for the taking to Saturday attendees. And of course, the traditional lighting of the woods.
So if you're on the main stage looking out, there's a grove of trees off to the left, probably 70 to 80 trees. And so we wrap those all with a, you know, miniature Christmas lights, and then we light them up at night. So it's pretty cool.
The ethos of Larry Fest seems infectious. Visiting artists even compose songs about it. One singing, "There's just one place I want to go. I go to Larry Fest. It's not the biggest, but the very best.
I go to Larry Fest. It's not the biggest, but the very best. String music in a holy west."
WPR's Ezra Wall brought us that story on Larry Fest. Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin in partnership with Wisconsin Humanities. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. I'm Maureen McCollum.
It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Mental Health America of Wisconsin launches what it calls a peer support warm line. The person who takes the call has lived experiences dealing with mental health issues and substance use. The project is called Uplift Wisconsin. Call in with a question or comment, 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Jensen Bazio is program supervisor for Uplift Wisconsin. Jensen, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Hi, good morning, Katie, and hi, everybody. Thanks for having me on.
Good morning. The service is described as a warm line. How is it different from a hotline like 988?
Yeah, so I like to say a hotline is, you know, in regard to a crisis, and a warm line is, it could be a step before that or a few steps before that. And I like to think of us as, you know, that prevention and early intervention kind of aspect that prevents them from crossing the bridge to crisis.
And so a conversation might be about listening, and what should callers expect if they call Uplift Wisconsin?
Yeah, so if you call into Uplift Wisconsin, you can expect 100% anonymity and confidentiality. We can't see your name or phone number. And you can expect to talk to an operator with lived experience. They're certified peer support specialists. And like you said, they're really just there to listen to whatever you may be going through in life, a current event, or, you know, something that's been happening over time, really anything.
So how much time might the peer support specialist spend with the caller?
So Uplift Wisconsin, we chose to not have a hard maximum or cap as far as the duration of the call. Usually it's about 20 minutes to an hour, I would say, if I had to. But really it's just, you know, is this call fulfilled? Those gut feelings on both the operator and the caller's end.
Yes. Is this call fulfilled? I'm wondering, like, how might a conversation end? What might the sign-off be like, or know that it's okay to end the call for that peer support specialist?
Yeah, sure. So, you know, just talking through it and really getting context of what the caller may be experiencing. You know, we're not therapists and or counselors. We're just certified peer support specialists. So, you know, going through the conversation with the caller, letting them get out everything that they, you know, want to get out, calling the line is a huge thing. Crossing, you know, even that bridge, the prevention and early intervention bridge, is a huge thing to do. So holding that space for the caller and, you know, having them let you know that they've accomplished everything they need to accomplish, I would say, is a great indicator. But, you know, anyone could call at any point in the day. They could call multiple times a week. So even if they didn't get everything out that conversation, they could always call the next day.
Jensen, the warm line taking calls from noon until midnight, 7 days a week. There are plans to expand it to a 24/7 line, perhaps by the end of the year, if you can elaborate on such a timeline. I'm just wondering, what are you learning so far about this warm line?
Oh, that's a good question. Yeah, so we just launched July 31st, and what I'm learning is that this was a service that was much needed in the state of Wisconsin, and, you know, we've been getting an increase in calls by the day just over the past 10, 11, 12 days, And I could tell that the service is, you know, going to be a positive impact on the state of Wisconsin. A lot of people are utilizing it already.
What sets these peer support specialists apart from, say, counselors or therapists?
Thank you for asking that. Yeah, so a certified peer support specialist, again, they don't have these credentials in counseling or being a therapist. It's just a person who lives in the state of Wisconsin who has their own lived experience of mental health or substance abuse challenges and has completed this formal training and certification in the peer specialist model of mental health and substance use-oriented peer support, which is provided by the SAMHSA, which is the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration.
How can a person become a peer support specialist?
Yeah, so actually one of the trainers works at Mental Health America Wisconsin. He is my manager. Mm-hmm. And you can go to wicps.org to learn more. And I believe they have them annually, if not biannually, the trainings, and they're in person or online.
You mentioned the call being anonymous, that there is full confidentiality. What happens if a call escalates to a point where crisis services may be needed?
Yeah, so I would say that is the biggest difference between us and 988. So while we don't market ourselves as a crisis service, if people are in crisis, they can call. But part of this experience on the uplift line is, the call is led by the caller. So even if they're in crisis, we are not going to be calling emergency services on them unless they specifically request it from us, and that process will be led by the caller.
Some callers might not want to talk on the phone, would prefer a texting type, exchange or a chat. Are there any plans to expand in that direction?
Definitely. Yeah, so we are planning to expand with the 24-hour launch. We plan to expand on texting and or a chat service, most definitely.
Jensen, thank you for joining us.
Yes, thank you for having me. I really, really appreciate you.
Jensen Bazio is Program Supervisor for Uplift Wisconsin. It's a peer-to-peer warm line through Mental Health America of Wisconsin. To reach Uplift Wisconsin, the number is 534-202-5438. That's 534-202-5438. And if you or someone you know needs crisis support, the Suicide and Crisis Lifeline is 988. And we continue the conversation with a focus on 988 implementation. And you can join the discussion about life-saving services. Call in with the question, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. We check in now on the 988 Wisconsin Lifeline implementation as the Substance Abuse and Mental Health Services Administration tracks the volume of monthly interactions on the 988 Lifeline, recording double-digit growth for nearly the first half of the year to this mental health hotline. Add your thoughts at any point. Call in with a question, 800-642-1234. Shelley Massal is program manager for the 988 Wisconsin Lifeline, operated by Family Services of Northeast Wisconsin. Shelley, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Morning, Kate. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. 988 Wisconsin receiving more than 90,000 calls or texts last year. What are people calling about?
We have really seen a rise in people calling, and it's just across the board about what people are calling for, which is great. So because of that name, that Suicide and Crisis Lifeline, a lot of people presume that all the calls are about suicide, but that's just not the case. That ends up being about 30% of our calls. The vast majority of people are reaching out just to talk about whatever's going on in their lives, could be relationship issues, job issues, difficulties managing their mental health, financial issues, school, whatever's going on.
Okay, so a wide variety of mental health issues, not specific to suicide. What do you see so far this year in terms of volume and what you're handling?
Yeah, we continue to see a lot of growth in call volume. I'm really seeing from that this is a needed service, that folks are looking for somebody to talk to and maybe finding what they need in that and returning to talk to us again, which is great also.
Do you have any insights on why Wisconsin would be at number two in the nation for increased call volume?
I think that it's probably a combination of things, some awareness, perhaps quality of service offered, and then just being willing to take a risk and try it out and reach out and maybe filling some of those gaps, particularly for people who don't know where to start. 988 has a lot of resources. We contract with 211, so their database imports into ours. So we have a wide breadth of resources that we can refer people to and help get them connected with. And so if people don't know where to start and are looking for some services, we can be a nice entry point there as well.
988 being free and anonymous, some callers, though, may be concerned that they may be reported to law enforcement or reported to emergency medical services. When does 988 report conversations to police or other emergency services?
Those kind of contacts are going to happen only in the most imminent of situations where we have pretty significant safety concerns. We're not able to safety plan with somebody or find some other alternative solution. We actually have built a culture within our call center of really emphasizing least restrictive interventions for folks. And so we want to be as least invasive as possible when we're trying to resolve whatever crisis somebody's dealing with. If there are those imminent situations, if somebody's already harmed themselves with the intent of dying by suicide or something of that nature, we are going to get intervention and get them some help. But the reality in Wisconsin is we have brought that down to right around between 0.5% and 1% of our calls where we're getting some sort of intervention. So it's a pretty small segment of the folks who are reaching out where we're getting some sort of intervention.
I want, if you could elaborate on 211, United Way 211, and the essential community services, because, resources, it's difficult sometimes to get people the help they need if there is a long waiting list in order to see a mental health provider. And maybe some resources may not be right there when they need it for that caller. Are you finding any types of delays or wait times in order to connect people to the services when they need those resources the most?
Unfortunately, mental health is much like the rest of the nation in that we are experiencing some labor shortages and that does create some waits and some service gaps for folks, particularly if they're looking to start seeing a therapist or something of that nature. And so there are some gaps that need to be filled, but there's a lot of different services and opportunities that can help bridge those gaps and meet those needs in the interim. And 211 has a great database. They're really diligent about keeping up to date and keeping the information up to date. They do have a huge mental health services section with a myriad of different resources that can help bridge some of those gaps and specialized services. But warm lines, like Uplift Wisconsin that you were talking to earlier, and hotlines like 988 can help bridge those gaps as well for folks.
Shelley Massal with us, program manager for the 988 Wisconsin Lifeline. As we talk about 988, 1 year since the launch of its three-digit number, you can join in with your questions and your concerns about the hotline, 800-642-1234. Shelley, since the crisis line was reduced to a three-digit number in 2022, call volume, as we talked about, has really increased. How does a national hotline, I wonder, roll over to Wisconsin?
So there are a network of about 200 call centers throughout the nation that are taking those calls. And each call center has a designated area. So right now calls are routed by the caller's area code. And so Wisconsin has just the one call center in our state. And so any Wisconsin area code is going to be routed to Wisconsin Lifeline versus the primary call center. But one of the nice things about that national network is that there are backup centers as well. So if there's a high volume time, everybody's on the phone, things like that, there are backup centers across the nation who are taking those calls. So anybody who calls is going to get their call answered. It just in some of those high volume times might not be in the state of Wisconsin.
I see. So there are backup resources in case the lines in Wisconsin are all taken at that moment. You know, the 988 Wisconsin Lifeline is funded through federal grants. Governor Tony Evers proposed $3 million in state funding in his most recent budget, but the Joint Finance Committee cut that funding. Do you need additional funds to support the hotline?
Right now, we're very fortunate. We are braiding together a number of different funding streams. There's some federal grants and federal dollars that are being put out to help support the implementation of 988 throughout the nation. We are fortunate to have received some of those in Wisconsin. We're braiding together that with some mental health block grant dollars and things like that in the state of Wisconsin. So we do have some alternative funding sources at the time that are helping to establish this service and maintain this service at this point.
What can you tell us about the texting and chat service component of 988 and how that has been received here in Wisconsin?
The texting is new within the last couple years, but chat has been around for quite some time. The chat service has become so much more robust with the addition of 988 and the text service. We are currently answering text and chat a couple hours a week or a couple hours a day in state right now, and the rest are being handled by those backup centers. But by the end of this year, those texts and chat will be responded to 24/7 in state as well. So we are building our capacity to be the call center for all three modalities right here within the state of Wisconsin. We are seeing that people are using both the text and chat modalities, and that both have been pretty popular. So either one is accessible for folks depending on how they choose to access.
Shelley, thank you for joining us.
Absolutely. Thanks again for having me.
Shelley Massal is program manager for the 988 Wisconsin Lifeline. It's operated by Family Services of Northeast Wisconsin. If you or someone you know may be considering suicide or is in crisis, call or text the 988 Suicide and Crisis Lifeline. Those three digits are 988. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.